just did have to answer
that. Tuesday the 29th of September, Yud Aleph Tishrei, Dr. Sholem Springer, Clouds of Glory.
Good morning, I'm not sure whether today is called Yisr Chag, perhaps it is, because Yom Kippur is Yom Tov. So good morning everyone, and Gemach Sima Tova. There's a Medrash which talks about the following, Ulakachtem Lochem B'yom Harishon, which is obviously referring to Sukkos, where the Torah commands us, Kachtem Lochem B'yom Harishon, that on the first day of Sukkos, we should take the Arba Minim. And the Medrash tells us a little story about Shnei B'nei Adam Shenichnosim L'din. Two people have got a din Torah with each other, some sort of sichsuch, some sort of maybe momentous argument. Man Netzach. And the people waiting outside in a Jewish court, you don't have a public gallery, but the people are waiting outside. Who has won this din Torah? Mishu Yoitzer Klezayin B'yodoi. The one who comes out of the courthouse and he holds his sword aloft, he holds his Klezayin above him, Hakol Yoidim Shehu Notzach. Everybody knows he's the winner, he's the victor. So the Medrash says, Kach, Yisrael v'umas oilim nichnosim ladin b'yoyim ha-kippurim. So, Klal Yisrael and the Goyim go into a din Torah on Yom Kippur, and we don't know who's won. Have we won? Have the Goyim won? Omar Kodesh Baruch Hu, ulakachtem lachem b'yoyim ha-rishoyin. And the Medrash therefore says, v'lulaveyim b'yodeyim, we come out on Sukkos with our lulavim in our hands, anan yodinon, Yisrael Nitzchi, that we have won the battle. Now, Rav Hutna in Pachad Yitzchok, Mamaches of Rosh Hashanah, deduces a number of things from here, and others use this medrash for the same purpose. There is a connection between Yom Kippur and Sukkos. We generally think of Sukkos being one of the Sholosh Ugonim, which it is, and Yom Kippur being one of the culmination of the Yom Noroim, which it is. But there is no connection between them other than calendarical, other than the fact that they're very close together on the calendar. So this Medrash has just told us that in fact there is more than just a calendar connection. There is actually a connection between Yom Kippur and Sukkos, and we are in that bridge. We are in those few days between Yom Kippur and Sukkos. So as far as the description of the Yomim Noroim and the Gimel Regolim, we have a very interesting, inclusive anomaly. Because Sukkos is therefore part of the Sholosh Ugonim, which it obviously is, but we've also just included it as an honorary member of the Yomim Noroim. So Sukkos has a dual role. It straddles the Yomim Noroim and the Sholosh Ugonim. It appears in both sets. And since it is also the last of the Sholosh Ugonim, and also, Yom Kippur is the last of the Yom Noroim in the Yerach Vayesonim, the special month of Tishri. Sukkos is really doubly special in that it is included in both. So that's the first derivation we have from our Medrash. The Medrash has connected for us the Sholosh Ugonim, or rather Sukkos, with the Yom Noroim, and so we've got a connection between Sukkos and Yom Kippur. The other fact that the Medrash has told us about is that there is a separation being made. Something happens. There is a process where we are going into a din Torah, so to speak, with a goyim, and that's a chiddush. In what way are we going into a din Torah with a goyim? Why is Klal Yisrael at odds with a goyim at this time? I thought Yom Kippur was a personal Yom Hadin. What has it got to do with a din Torah with ourselves, the Jewish people, and the Goyim? But the Medrash has just told us that's what's happening, and when we come out with our Lulavim on Sukkos, that is a symbol that we have won this Din Torah. We find, in relation to the Simcha of Sukkos, it's got a special description which we'll read from the Rambam, but at the moment let's do the Gemara, that talks about the special Simcha, and what sort of things happened during Sukkos, and in particular, the Simchas Beis HaShoeva. And we are told that there were Shirois and Rakidois, and there's a description about how those Rakidois took place, with the Talmid HaChomim in the middle, and the Hamanom surrounding these very, very lively rakidos. But something very special happened at the Simchas Beis HaSheva. The Gemara describes that at the Simchas Beis HaSheva, the Tanoim who were present, Rav Gamliel in particular, is mentioned, did things which were supernatural. So, for example, Rav Gamliel could juggle with 8 fiery torches. Now, I think we will all agree that Rav Gamliel, being one of the Tanoim, one of the Gedolei Hador, did not spend his time practicing juggling when he came home from the Beis HaMedrash. So the fact that he could pick up 8 torches and juggle with them was something that he did spontaneously, and he had the inspiration to do it, and he could do something which is, for most of us anyway, unless you train all your life, impossible. Another thing described by the Gemara, that he did a sort of special type of press-up, where he would fall forward and catch himself on his thumbs. And then in that position, sort of horizontal on the ground, he could push himself and return to the upright position again. And the Gemara describes it, Masha Enko Bria Yuchal Lasoisa. They were doing things there that normal people just cannot do. Masha Eno Kol Bria Yuchal Lasoisa. So what was happening there were supernatural events that the Tanoim were so inspired, the people at the Simchas Beis HaSheva, presumably early as well, were so inspired that something extraordinary, supernatural happened. Interesting in this connection about the supernatural aspect of the Simchas Beis HaSheva, there is a parasha in the Torah where Yaakov is journeying towards Lavan, where he's going to stay for some time. So Yaakov's journeying, as we know, and he comes across a group of shepherds, and they are milling around the well, and there is a mighty stone on this well, and he gets into conversation with them. By the way, it's a very interesting remark of how he gets into conversation with them. You know, he tells them, he asks them what's going on here, and then he starts sort of lecturing them a bit, and the question is, you know, what is his business, and most of them would have told him, you know, where to get off, and he gets into conversation with one word. He says, "Acha, acha," my brothers. He includes them, they include him, and the conversation works. Anyway, we know the story. And he is informed that they can't remove this stone, because it's an enormous stone, and until they get a sort of critical mass of numbers of shepherds, and they can all heave-ho together, and they can roll the stone off the well. So he takes the stone, and he rolls it off seemingly quite easily, we are told. So it's quite miraculous. Again, Yaakov Avinu is Yosheva Holim. He's a man who's in the Beis HaMedrash. He is not practicing with weights at night, you know, to get the super strength. So once again, we have this inspiration, a man of God getting inspired to do something, and he is inspired and rolls off this stone. It has been pointed out, most interestingly, that the word in a tiny little parasha, occupying no more than 6 or 7 lines in the Chumash, a tiny little parasha contains the word be'er 7 times. A reference, says the Baal HaTurim on the spot, to the Simchas Beis HaSheva. So we've got a sort of Gezeira Shove. Simchas Beis HaSheva, the miraculous and extraordinary things happening, and similarly in the story of the Be'er, something miraculous happened, something extraordinary happened in the sense of physical strength, extraordinary physical strength, or prowess. Chazal described Simchas Beis HaSheva as a special time for Baalei Tshuva. Now I hasten to add, although I might be connected to see it, when Chazal talk about Baalei Tshuva, they're not talking about that sort of Baal Tshuva. They're talking about us. They're talking about people who've had a Hira Tshuva, and we mended our ways. That's the Losh and the Chazal about Baalei Tshuva. So we are told that the Simchas Beis HaSheva is a special time, and that is Miyuchud. It is particular for, it's a Yom Tov of Baalei Tshuva. Mokon Miyuchud le Baalei Tshuva is the Losh and the Gemara, which is specifically the Simchas Beis HaSheva. We need to know why that is. And actually, there are a number of songs that they used to sing. One in particular that the Baalei Tshuva used to sing. They used to sing Ashrei Ziknu Seinu. That they are sort of praising the fact that now they have sort of come to their senses, a little bit older, a little bit wiser perhaps. Ashrei Ziknu Seinu Shekipru Yaldu Seinu. Now we have the opportunity in our older age to be mechaper on our younger times when we are a little bit more wild and carefree and a little bit less thinking. So that's what they used to sing at the Simchas Beis HaSheva. Baruch Hashem, we have seen the fact that we must do tshuva and mend our ways. So this was particular for Baalei Tshuva, this Simchas Beis HaSheva. There are other times in the year which could have been miyuchud for Baalei Tshuva. Why just the Simchas Beis HaSheiva? In the words of Rav Huttner, I would like to begin to explain the difference between the Atah B'chartonu, that we say every Yom Tov, Atah B'chartonu, Mikolam Emechon Havdoi, Sonu B'Ritzis Abonu, etc. We all know that. Every single Yom Tov, all five Yom Tovim, we say the identical tefillah, Atah B'chartonu, is the same. However, says Rav Huttner, the Atah B'chartonu, let's just take the Shorosh HaGorim, that we say on Pesach and Shavuos, is not the same in terms of meaning to the Atah B'chartonu that we say on Sukkot. The words are the same, but the meaning is different. And we shall see how that works. In order to do that, in order to explain this, allow me to digress. Obviously, this year, connecting Yom Kippur to Sukkot, is going to have elements of both. Now, we know that there is a special tefillah that we say over and over again, and have done over the last few weeks, Hashem, Hashem, the Yud Gimel Midas, Kerachim B'chanon, Erech Apayim, etc. And Chazal tells us that we have a repeat of those words, Hashem, Hashem, the Yud Kei Vov Kei, repeated, because they represent different midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Hashem that we say at first, the first Hashem, represents the Ribbono Shel Olam in his creative mode of creating the universe and everything that goes with it, and the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam sustains the world. So that's the first Hashem. It's the Hashem that we are most familiar with in our daily lives. B'nei Chaya Umzoyna. The Ribbono Shel Olam creates everything that we need, and the Ribbono Shel Olam is in his mode of creativity, creating the world, which, by the way, we have no shaykhus to. We are unable to create something from nothing, ex nihilo creation. We are unable to do that, and that is therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu's department and domain. The second mention of Hashem is a different one entirely, say Chazal. That is referring to man after he has sinned. So the first Hashem is Koidem Achet, before, now it's Adam Rishon, when he was first created, and everything is there for him, and everything is prepared. That's the first Hashem. And then the second Hashem is after the Chet, that the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't just zap us. The Ribbono Shel Olam gives us an opportunity to correct our faults, and for us to do tshuva. And as a result of tshuva, something incredible happens. Something which we have no access to happens, and that means that the Ribbono Shel Olam reaches back in time, which we can't do. We can't put the clock back, but the Ribbono Shel Olam seemingly can put the clock back and correct our averus, and with tshuva we can have our averus corrected. So that's something miraculous. Now we've got lots of other midas. We've got 11 other midas that follow. Erech Chaim, Rav Chesed, you know, we even sometimes tell the Emes as well. So we've got other midas as well. There's a difference between the midas contained in Hashem Hashem and the midas that follow. The midas that follow, Erech Apayim, Rav Chesed, you know, you and I can do that too. We can also be in Erech Apayim, a bit slower to get angry, a little bit of patience. We can't do it like the Ribbono Shel Olam does it, of course, but we can do it too. We also have MS in us. We also have all those midas, all the 11 midas we can emulate, we can do. But what we can't do, and what we can't even understand, are the midas that are contained in those two words, Hashem, Hashem. And that is why that they're expressed like that, because they have no way, there is no way that there can be a description, for the simple reason that we have no access. We don't create worlds, and therefore that's the first Hashem. And also, we can do tshuva, but we can't effect the consequences of tshuva. We can't actually do the rubbing out of the avir. That's the Ribbono Shel Olam's department. And that's why that word, which refers to the middle of the Ribbono Shel Olam in connection with tshuva, is written out as Hashem. That's the only thing we have access to. You do it, we can't. We've no. All the others, got a shaykhus too. Those two, I don't know anything about them at all. I don't know how they work. I have no idea how it works. So tshuva and its consequences is a chiddush. It's something that the Ribbono Shel Olam creates for us. And we know the circumstances in which they were created. After the Egel, Moshe Rabbeinu was given this special tefillah containing Hashem Hashem, the Yugurim Midas. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, well, you know, you were very, very close to annihilation. And the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us something special, a formula, such that when we use this formula, we can pull away from the brink. So this second Hashem is Achash Yechter, after we have sinned, we can use this second Hashem, and the Ribbono Shel'olam does something very miraculous. So just to summarize this, the first Hashem refers to Bnei Chaim Zoyna, and therefore when we direct our tefillahs in general, like this morning, general tefillahs, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about general sustenance, general good health, etc., all the things that we want in a general sense. That's tefillah. When, on the other hand, we are uttering the tefillahs connected with tshuva, then we're doing something quite different. They're very, very different. And they, so to speak, come from different worlds. The second one, which we do in connection with tshuva, all the tefillahs connected with tshuva, are special tefillahs given to Moshe Rabbeinu with Yud Gimel Midas to say that when Klal Yisrael reach a certain point where they deserve an elation, Chas V'Sholom, you can use this formula and I will pull away from the brink and I will do something special for you. So the tefillahs are also different. Just as the creation process of the creation of the world and teshuvah are different things, so also the tefillahs directed to those two departments are very, very different. I'll prove it to you. When Klal Yisrael are at the Yam Suf, and there they are in terrible trouble, and they're there with the borders of the Yam Suf, the seashore of the Yam Suf, and the howling Egyptians are behind them, the deserts all around, all seems to be lost. And Moshe Rabbeinu starts davening. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says something which is absolutely stunning. The Ribbono Shel Olam says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Ma titzak elai? Why are you davening to me? It's the wrong time to daven. Olai hadova toloi, veloi olecho sechazal. This is my issue. It's my department. You've got no business davening now. It's not the time to daven. Because Kriyas Yam Suf was all arranged from the start. As the Torah says, that after Kriyas Yam Suf, when the sea went back to its original position, it went le'esonoi, to its original position. And Chazal Darshan le'esonoi, le'tanoi horishon. The tanoim, the conditions that the Ribbono Shel Olam made up with the sea was, you should be a sea, a normal sea with waves, etc. But when Klal Yisrael knock on your door to cross, then you've got a part, then you've got to do something special. So I've arranged it all, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is nothing, none of your business. This is part of Bris Olam. It's Tanoi Arishon. So there are times when normal tefillah does not work and is not appropriate. You've got no business in my initial creations and my conditions, etc., with the sea. So leave it to me, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. And in the same way, tshuva is not just an extension of the ordinary processes of tefillah. Tshuva is something special. It does something special. It creates something, opens doors which normally are not open. And these are the doors that the Ribbono Shel Olam opened for Moshe Rabbeinu when, as we are told, that Moshe Rabbeinu was davening and did some very hard work over those 40 days, and there were the three sets of 40 days. First 40 days we all know about, ended off in the Egel in tragedy. The second 40 days was the ones where Moshe Rabbeinu davened, where the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to annihilate Klal Yisrael, and Moshe Rabbeinu worked hard over these 40 days. And the third 40 days was in order that Moshe Rabbeinu can relearn the Torah. That was from Rosh Chodesh Elul until Yom Kippur. And then at the end of those 40 days, we received the Torah as new. And therefore, we seamlessly move into section 3, which is those last 40 days. Because at the end of those 40 days, what happened yesterday on Yom Kippur, we always think of it as a day of tshuva, which of course it is. But it's something more. It's actually our real day of Matan Torah. That is the day we receive the Torah. So the Torah that we've got, the second set of luchos that Moshe Rabbeinu brought down on Yom Kippur, is the luchos that we obtained through tshuva. It's a direct consequence of tshuva. So our tshuva is a culmination of a long process. That's why we blow shofar throughout Chodesh Elul. And then we have Tishri and its special time. It culminates in an acceptance by the Ribbono Shel Olam of our tshuva and a reaffirmation that we are the ones to receive the Torah. So we've got two sources. The source number one is Vav Sivan, and source number two is actually Yom Kippur. The one we have is the Yom Kippur Torah. The other one was smashed, so we don't have that. So in sum, the world of tshuva has its own source and its own rules, and is capable of effecting a rescue The Rabbi Nishalem says, Honichali, withdraw from me and I will vaporize them. The Rabbi Nishalem says, I'm going to annihilate Klal Yisrael. And of course, Moshe's tshuva, Moshe's efforts, and our own efforts made sure that we were taken away from the brink with a new Torah. So let's now have a look at the connection with Sukkos. We have here, we've got a guidebook, if you like. The Rabbi Shalom gave him a guidebook of how to become a Baal Tshuva. We do that through the second set of Luchos. If I've got a couple of minutes, let me just explain the difference between the first set of Luchos and the second and the significance. Because we are now going to get a lot of twos. There are a lot of things befores and afters. The first set of Luchos were intended for Klal Yisrael, who was standing at the mountain on the 6th of Sivan. They had climbed up 49 Shari Kedusha, and they were in a position which Chazal describe as Ka'odom Harishon Koidem HaChet. Just like Adam Harishon was before the Chet, which means that Adam Harishon being Igia Kapov Shel Rabbi Nishlon, he was the first manufacturer of the Rabbi Nishlon's hands, and you could not imagine, there's lots of descriptions of Adam Harishon's Kedusha. He was on the pinnacle of Kedusha that a man can reach. You can't imagine, and there cannot be any Kedusha greater for a human being than the Kedusha of Adam Rishon, and similarly for the Yidden on the 6th of Sivan. When they were waiting to hear the voice of the Rabbi Shalom, they were on the top level of Kedusha. Now the first Luchos were the creation and the product of the Rabbi Shalom's own hand. He gave us the stone, and he gave us the writing. So the first Luchos were Kuloi Kodesh. And that fitted very, very well with the gift to the Jewish people who were also at this point Kuloi Kodesh. So in other words, the two twinned together, the two chimed beautifully. Kuloi Kodesh were the Luchos, and Kuloi Kodesh were Klal Yisrael, until of course we messed up. But at that point, just before the Egel, the Luchos, which were the product of the Rabbi Nishroinim, were the exact and most appropriate Luchos for Klal Yisrael. It was a marriage, if you'll pardon the phrase, a marriage made in heaven. They were beautifully suited to each other. However, after the Egel, and when Moshe Rabbeinu is coming down the mountain, and he's holding these Luchos, which are Kulai Kodesh, and he's seeing Klal Yisrael, and they have dropped in Madrega, then now it becomes most inappropriate to give them those Luchos. This is Kulai Kodesh. Klal Yisrael are no longer on the 49th Shara Kedusha, nowhere near it. And Moshe Rabbeinu takes those Luchos and smashes them, for which he gets a Shkoyach from the Rabbi Nishlam. Exactly the right thing to do. However, the second set of Luchos are very, very different. Here, the Gush, here, the Gashmias part of it, the stone, is hewn out by Moshe Rabbeinu and given to the Rabbi Nishlam, who then writes on it, the symbolism being clear. Rav Dessler explained this, Friedlander explained this, lots of others, no doubt. The symbolism being clear, now all of a sudden we have something that is Gashmias. The Rabbi Nishlam writes on it, which raises Gashmias to something Ruchnias, which is now the new role of the Torah. The Torah no longer will maintain us at that wonderful height of Kedusha which we were before. Now the Torah takes something, sinners, us, and will raise us to something greater. Symbolized by the Luchos, which are made out of earth, which are made out of pure Gashmias, and the Torah, which the Rabbi Shem writes on it, raises it, which is now the function of the Torah, in order to purify us. So that's the new Torah, and that answers the question why Rabbi Shabbeinu had to learn the Torah all over again, and why he spent 40 days on the mountain when he's learned it already. That's all now very, very clear. He had to learn it in a new way, which suited the giving of this Torah to Baalei Tshuva, to people who have sinned. But we also have something else that's going on. The day after Yom Kippur, that's today, yeah, we are the day after Yom Kippur, and we had Slicha, Mechila, and Kapora. We were assured of it on Yud Aleph. They started bringing the materials for the Mishkan, and this carried on to Yud Beis tomorrow and the next day. And Vayakel Moshe, this is Vayakel Moshe, where they started bringing all the things to build the Mishkan, culminating in the building of the Mishkan on the first day of Sukkos. And then something absolutely wonderful happened to Klal Yisrael, because the Anonim return. The Anonim had disappeared after the Chet of the Egel. And so, if you like, you know, Atta B'chaton, who we talked about before, yes, we were chosen. When we came out of Mitzrayim, and then later on, we received the Torah, we were the chosen people. Atta B'chaton, Mikol Amim, Avto Isono, etc. That refers to the Ribbono Shelom choosing us, and choosing us to be the special nation, to be the Am HaNivchar. And then we did the Egel. And now we're at a level playing field again. We're level, if you like, with the Goyim. We are, in modern language, deselected. Yeah, we're deselected. We were selected, now we are deselected. And now, our existence and our future is very much hanging in the balance. It's only because of our own tshuva and Moshe Rabbeinu's efforts that we were reselected again. So in other words, when those clouds came back, which is a symbol that the Ribbono Shel'olam has chosen us again, the second choosing is totally different from the first one. In other words, Yom Kippur, where that final selection is taking place, and the Ribbono Shel'olam has got to choose which nation is he going to pick. We read out the Medrash before. We and the Goyim go into a Din Torah on Yom Kippur, and we are very scared. We're very worried. Who is the Ribbono Shel'olam going to choose? And then, after the fourth day, when the Anonim came back, the Anonim returned to Klal Yisrael, and they realized that we have been reselected. We are the Am HaNivchar. So therefore, says Rav Utna, when we say, Atta B'chaton Mikol HaAmim on Sukkos, that's a totally different Atta B'chaton. That's a new selection. That's a whole new game, a whole new selection, that we can be selected, even though we're not on the pinnacle of Kedusha, even though we do occasionally do our Averus, that we have the mechanism of doing tshuva. And therefore, this tshuva is very, very effective for us. And we have the full confidence that we will be selected again. I mentioned before that something very special happens at the Simcha Space of Sheva. The Loshon of the Rambam is as follows. Afalpi, Shekola Moedois Mitzvah Lismoyach Bohem. Even though there is a Mitzvah of Simcha in all Yom Tovim. But on Sukkos, there was an additional Simcha. And he then describes of how that Simcha took place, which I've made a reference to before, with the Talmid Chachamim in the middle. And I must tell you sort of a personal story, and what I take this to mean, and all that we've said about the Tshuva on Yom Kippur giving rise to the Simcha on Sukkos. The two go hand in hand. You see, if our Yom Kippur is right, if we have this feeling of dread, then that feeling of dread gives way to a feeling of simcha. A marshal, a very simple marshal, let's call him Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith has to go to hospital because he thinks he's got something trivial. He's got a boil on his back. He goes to hospital, doctor examines and says, well, I think this might be a little bit more serious than just a boil. Have to do some tests. Anyway, he does some tests, and then a day or so later, Mr. Smith gets a phone call. I'm very sorry to tell you, but, I think there's a suspicion here of the big C. And you've got to come in tomorrow for some real in-depth tests. So you can imagine how Mr. Smith feels. He feels absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible. He just doesn't know where to turn. His friends can't speak to him. He's feeling in the depth of despair. You know, that terrible name. He's feeling awful. Then all of a sudden, next morning, he's ready to go to his appointment. He gets another phone call. And a very embarrassed doctor is on the end of the line and says, Mr. Smith, I'm very sorry, but there were a lot of Mr. Smiths walking around the hospital that day, and we've made a mistake. We confused your x-rays with somebody else. There's nothing wrong with you at all. Can you imagine what Mr. Smith feels like now? He runs out to his friends, comes out for a drink. Basically, we've got to celebrate his jumping for joy. He doesn't know where to put himself. So in accordance, in proportion to the feelings of dread that he had beforehand, that's what will give way to the feelings of joy. Must tell you a personal story. I was in the grounds of Ponyvich. It goes back 45 years. An old story, I was a bocher still. I was standing in the grounds with my brother-in-law, who's a younger man from Ponyvich, and towards us we can see an old man who's shuffling towards us. And my brother-in-law tells me that this is Rav Chaskel Levenstein, the great Rav Chaskel Levenstein. He's coming closer and closer. Anyway, he's going to introduce me. So he comes closer and he sort of slows down, sees two people waiting. And my brother-in-law, you know, tries to introduce his brother-in-law from London, This man will have none of it. Yeah? He just sort of stops for a minute, his eyes have got a faraway look, and just says two words. This is Elul, middle of Elul. He says, Shvereteg, Shvereteg, and he shuffles on towards the base of Medrash. Now, that image is in my mind 45 years later. For a man like that, he wouldn't waste time on, you know, how's Trafalgar Square. He wouldn't waste time on this sort of thing, or even say hello. These people conducted a Tanis Dibur, the whole of Elul, they wouldn't talk. And you can see that for these people, the approaching, the upcoming Din Torah, the upcoming Yom HaDin, is something very, very real. It's real for them. They have a feeling of dread. And of course, after Yom Kippur, when they've done their best efforts, and they have a confidence that they are going to be reselected, Klal Yisrael is going to be reselected, can you imagine, like Mr. Smith, the feelings of joy that they have in proportion to the feelings of dread that we have for Yom Kippur? No, there is a halacha, we all know, that on Erev Yom Kippur, you've got to eat. It's a mitzvah to eat. I'm going to fast 25 hours. And so are you. You've got to be told to eat? Yes. If you're like Rechaska Leibenstein, you've got to be told to eat. The last thing he had was any appetite, Erev Yom Kippur. He's got to be told to eat. For a man like that, the feeling of dread, and then the feeling of the Yom HaDin coming up, is very, very real. The old friend and enemy, the clock, has told me I've got to stop, just to be say one little remark. You know, someone once said, how odd of God to choose the Jews. And someone else replied, not odd of God, the Goyim annoy him. We are going to go.